a shot, runs into the box, shot, score!
It's time for Atlanta Soccer Tonight.
Tune in as Jason Longshore gives you insight and analysis on the beautiful game, including headlines from around the world of soccer.
Rebound, score!
This is Atlanta Soccer Tonight, brought to you by your local Ford dealer. At Firehouse Subs, enjoy more subs, save more lives.
Atlanta Soccer Tonight is on Sports Radio 92.9, The Game. Here's Jason Longshore.
Let's kick it. Atlanta Soccer Tonight is live on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. I'm Jason Longshore. This is our weekly show. This is our usual time slot. It's been a very busy summer, the summer of soccer. Still going on, but the tournaments that were the centerpiece of the summer of soccer, they have concluded. We'll talk about that tonight, kind of the wrap-up of the Euros, of the Copa America. We'll also look ahead to Atlanta United, a double match week, and it feels like we've been doing this, I don't know, for a month plus now. The schedule has been absolutely insane. Two games, at least both in the same place. Not going to be easy games, though. NYC and Columbus, the defending MLS Cup champions. We'll talk about that in the second segment. And the 3-4-3 makes its return. It's been a busy summer. We've had to change up the shape a little bit. The 3-4-3 is back. That's how we'll close out the show. But let's start with the tournament recap. It was very busy this summer with the Euros and the Copa America. And look, if you're a fan like me, to be able at times during the group stage to watch games at 9 a.m. and then watch games kicking off at 9 p.m. with the best national teams in the world, just amazing stuff. It was a lot of fun. And the Copa America has, in general, been in different years than the Euros. I hope it continues in this kind of a run. Would love to see this be a common thing. I think it's a big opportunity. I think they can play off of one another. At times, there are comparisons between the two, and that doesn't always look good on the CONMEBOL side of things. And yes, we're going to talk a little bit about CONMEBOL in this segment. I apologize in advance. But I think both tournaments in different ways were big successes. And honestly, in the biggest way, and it's not always this outcome, the best team in the Euros was Spain. They won. The best team in the Copa America was Argentina, and they won. There were other great stories along the way in both tournaments, but the best teams in each tournament ended up lifting the trophy. And it really sets up a very fun finalissima match, the matchup between the Euro champions and the Copa America champions. I can't wait for that between Argentina and Spain. I'm really looking forward to it. Two teams that generally haven't played one another in competitive matches. You know, you get those rivalries across continents at times. Mexico, for example, and I know they've been a participant in CONMEBOL competition more often, but Mexico and Argentina have quite the rivalry. Argentina and England have quite the rivalry. Games that have that different feel to them. I think Germany and Brazil will always have a different feel after the 7-1 World Cup semifinal. It's cool that you get this, Argentina and Spain, after being the two best teams of the summer. Let's talk a little bit about Spain. I thought it was interesting. Cucurella was able to get a little bit of revenge on Gary Neville. Gary Neville had a lot of things to say ahead of the tournament. He said, I think he is one of the reasons I think Spain probably can't go all the way. He hasn't been convincing at Chelsea, played some matches towards the end of the season, aggressive, tenacious, a small, very active fullback. His price tag continues to astonish everyone to this day. I don't know if it's so astonishing after this tournament. And Cucurella on social media said, "We went all the way, Gary. Thanks for your support." Thought he was great in the tournament. Unai Simón, the goalkeeper for Spain, said he's one of the best. People in Spain are crazy about him, and we'll surely see it in the celebrations. I'm very happy for him. He's a player that you have guys that at times jump off the field, and sometimes it's physical characteristics. And look, Cucurella's hair helps him stand out for sure. There's no way around that. But it's also his activity. I mean, Gary Neville did say it. He's very active. That's what's going to get people's attention. And he's memorable in a variety of ways. And in maybe sometimes in the Premier League, he's memorable in what he doesn't do. And maybe he's not the best fit at times for the style of play. But as a talented player, he's up there. And I think it's something that we're going to get into Gareth Southgate in a second. This will kind of lead us there a little bit. At times, because of the money in the Premier League, at times because of the attention in the Premier League, the TV, the here in the US, the shared language, at times, the Premier League and what happens in the Premier League is very heavily focused on and outweighs everything else around the world. And it's not fair on both sides of it. It's not fair to a player like Cucurella, who doesn't get the respect that he deserves for being a brilliant footballer. It's not fair at times when teams go up against England and they're not talked about. And it's not fair on the English side of things because it creates expectations that are not fair and realistic. And I think Gareth Southgate has been the victim of that in a way. Gareth Southgate has been to back-to-back Euro finals. He's been to a World Cup semifinal. He's been to a World Cup quarterfinal. That's an incredible run. Maybe it needed to end anyway. Maybe after two World Cups and two Euros, it was time to walk away anyway. But I'd be willing to bet that some of the treatment that Gareth Southgate has received and from fans, I think directly from fans, some of the things that he was subjected to. I think some of the punditry and some of the comments that were very disrespectful to him. I think those things made it easier for him to walk. And I just don't know how England gets better without what Gareth Southgate has done. He has a very talented, he's had, you got to say in the past tense now, he's had a very talented player pool to work with, but he has done a good job in taking them as far as he has. I think you guys know by now me, when I talk about the game, you know the things that I enjoy. And what I try to always do when we have these conversations and we get into this stuff, there's a difference between the style and the taste that we like and what is quality and what isn't quality. I would have loved to have seen England at times be more expansive. I would have loved to have seen a bigger involvement of Cole Palmer, for example. Would have loved to have seen Phil Foden centrally a little bit more. Would have loved to have found a way to get the most exciting attacking talents on the field and free to do what they do. Would have loved to have seen those things. It's hard to really say that Southgate got it wrong when he got to the final again and lost to the better team. Spain's a better team. Players who are in the Spanish team, whether they're in the Premier League or not, whether they're respected in England or not, they were the better team. Lamine Yamal, incredible tournament. Nobody could touch him. Nico Williams, I think at times, goes under the radar because of what Lamine Yamal has done. And Nico Williams, amazing. What those two have brought to the Spanish national team has changed them completely. They were the better team. That doesn't mean Gareth Southgate failed. They lost to the better team. Probably time to go anyway. But keep these things in mind when we turn the corner and get to what could be coming. It's Atlanta Soccer Tonight. I'm Jason Longshore. We're breaking down the summer of soccer, the Euros, the Copa America. We have to talk U.S. men's national team a little bit in this conversation as well. Expected more in the Copa America. Expected to get out of the group. They did not. That failure cost Greg Berhalter his job. Gareth Southgate got to a Euro final. He walked away, probably did as much as he could, maybe tired of the nonsense. And Gareth Southgate will be a consideration for the U.S. men's national team job. No question about it. And if he's not, then there's something wrong. And if anyone questions why he is being considered, there's something wrong. I would love to see a more attacking style from Gareth Southgate. I think we've seen it in England at times, but you cannot argue with his success. He would walk in the door and be the most successful manager that the U.S. men's national team has ever had. No question about it. Don't even say Jurgen Klinsmann's name because he's not going to appear. Okay? Don't even do it. Jurgen Klinsmann got to a World Cup semifinal. He didn't get anywhere else in anything else. Gareth Southgate, back-to-back Euro finals and a World Cup semifinal and a quarterfinal on top of that. If he's interested in the U.S. men's national team job, you drop everything and you go and have that conversation and you see what he wants to talk about. Flat out, no questions asked. And if anybody tries to sit here and tell you that he is not a good candidate for the U.S. men's national team job, just put your fingers in your ears. Is he the right person? I don't know. Does he want to take it? I'd love to hear what he would have to say. I'd love to be in that room. I'd love to hear how he would sell himself on the job if that's what he wants. Would love to hear these things. But if he's interested, you get on the plane and you're sitting down with him, whatever his favorite tea is, whatever he likes, you're going to have that conversation. I would be very, very intrigued to hear how that one would go. Mauricio Pochettino is another name that has been linked to the U.S. men's national team job in various circles. And, you know, you can get into the validity or not, but this is going to be the conversation all summer long until the U.S. men's national team hires a manager. Mauricio Pochettino has not managed at the international level. I love him as a manager in terms of how he feels the game and how he sees the game. Can that be translated to the national team level? I don't know. It's different. Some guys work better at club level. Some guys work better at national team level. I don't know where Pochettino would fit in that conversation, kind of the same conversation we had about Jurgen Klopp when the fantasy land was continuing about him being interested in the job. We know what Southgate has done at the national team level. Pochettino, we don't know. I like his style of football a little bit more, but Southgate's gotten results. So I would be intrigued to hear the conversation with both. But if Southgate's interested, you go have that conversation. CONMEBOL has been having conversations as we wrap this first segment up of Atlanta Soccer Tonight. They have tried to deflect the blame from all of the controversies around the Copa America final. They have tried everything possible to blame it on everybody possible. And as I said on Sunday night's show, there is a common denominator in how a Super Bowl was handled at Hard Rock Stadium, how the 1994 World Cup was handled all over the country, how the 2016 Copa America Centenario was handled all over the country, how college football national championship games get handled all over the country. And then there's a very different denominator in how the Copa America semifinal in Charlotte and the final in Miami was handled. That's CONMEBOL. They did not do a good job of organizing it. Hard Rock Stadium pushed back on CONMEBOL's comments about deflecting. We'll talk about that a little bit more. But CONMEBOL is going to try to distract the conversation from how they did not organize this tournament well. It ends up being a great success. It was a great success on English language TV in the U.S., on Spanish language TV in the U.S., in the stands for all of the big games. Of course, there were a few that didn't draw as well. A great success with a lot of controversies along the side. CONMEBOL can do better, and they have to going forward. It is time to grow up. It is time to be more professional. It is time to stop blaming everybody else because you have an amazing product in the Argentine national team. What we saw with Colombia, who was a fun team to watch, Brazil, Ecuador, Uruguay, so many talented teams. It's good for the U.S. and Mexico and Canada to be in this tournament. It's good for CONCACAF, CONMEBOL interaction, but they've got to step up and be more professional for that to continue. We will see if they can grow up. We'll talk about it plenty as more conversations come. But coming up next, two matches this week for Atlanta United. We'll get you ready for them on the other side of the break. You're listening to Atlanta Soccer Tonight on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
When it comes to the world of soccer, we've got you covered.
This is Atlanta Soccer Tonight with Jason Longshore
on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Welcome back. It's Atlanta Soccer Tonight on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. I'm Jason Longshore talking about Atlanta United in this segment. Not the best of nights at Stade Saputo on Saturday. A 1-0 loss, a red card to Steon Gregersen, a first half that was a struggle. There weren't a lot of scoring opportunities in it on the Atlanta side. There weren't too many dangerous ones for Montreal, though some very interesting tactics. But the goal conceded early in the second half and the second yellow for Steon Gregersen, you kind of thought that might end up really dooming this one to get maybe out of hand, and it didn't. And Atlanta United battled back and fought forward, actually looked better on the offensive side with 10 men than with 11, and had opportunities to create scoring opportunities. Unfortunately, they didn't take the opportunity to create the scoring opportunity, and that was really the big letdown in this one. Even with 10, when they got into the attacking third, got into the attacking half, and had half chances, quarter chances, three quarters chances, however you want to judge it, it felt like something. I had flashbacks to my basketball playing days at the YMCA. And when I was a not very good basketball player, a very streaky shooter, oh, if I got hot, I could cause some problems. But if I didn't see the ball for a while in shooting opportunities, I'd rush it. And I remember a coach talking to me about that and saying, you know, like, you can't rush it when you do get that first opportunity. You can't force it. And it feels like this team a little bit right now with Thiago Almada gone, it's like they know they're not going to create as many chances. And when they get into the attacking area, they're not just letting fire. They're not just going for it. And I get it, but I think this team can take more chances in those moments. I think they can be riskier because the groups that we've seen on the field over the past feels like multiple months, but it's just been a few weeks because of all the games that they've played, which is an issue, by the way. It feels like this group, for whatever reason, and I just put it down to some of the chemistry and the personnel around it, they are very good in their counter pressure. They're very good at winning the ball back in the attacking half. That means you can take some chances. You can have if you have a decent look from 20 yards out, take the shot. If you have the opportunity to put in a ball into the 18, and yeah, it's a 50-50 on if the attacker gets to it, play it, take the chance. If you have a look to try to squeeze a pass through, take it. It feels like they get to the attacking third and they're looking for the perfect opportunity and not a good opportunity. And that's natural when you're not getting as many opportunities in these moments to tighten up. I'd rather, and maybe it's just me flashing back to my YMCA basketball days, I'd rather take the chance. And I think the biggest difference, besides the fact that I wasn't very good at basketball, is that this team can win the ball back. They're good defensively. They're scrappy defensively. They don't give up a lot of goals in the run of play. And in the attacking half, they're very good at winning the ball back and creating an even better opportunity. So go for that dribble, go for that through ball, put in that cross, take that shot from distance. Do those things that start to generate some positive momentum, because when you're not finishing plays, when you're not getting the shot off, when you're not forcing a save, when you're not forcing a goal kick, when you turn the ball over and the other team gets those chances to break, you don't get any positive momentum. You take a shot and you force a save, you get positive momentum. You take a shot and it's not a difficult save, but it's a save. That gets some positive momentum. You take a shot and you narrowly miss. That gets some positive momentum. I would love to see this team be riskier in the attacking half, even though they're not going to get as many opportunities because of the personnel that you're dealing with right now. One of the things in the Montreal match that I asked Brooks Lennon about yesterday after training was the fact that they definitely flooded certain parts of the field, the attacking half. I felt like they pinned Atlanta in. Atlanta didn't want to sit as deep as they did in the first half, and I thought they corrected it very well in the second. But it was the movement and maybe the unexpected movements that pinned Atlanta in the first half. Here's what Brooks Lennon had to say about the Montreal match.
Yeah, Rob kind of wanted us to have a solid block defensively. I thought against Salt Lake we were kind of getting drawn out at times, and they were able to create opportunities. Whereas Montreal in the first half, I thought we stayed in a very solid block. Guys were working for each other. We just weren't able to get up the pitch and kind of secure possession when we needed to. We talked about it this morning in video, and it's great to get into a solid block and be solid defensively. But at times we need to progress up the pitch and have our aggression be more higher up the pitch and try to regain balls. And when we do, whether we go on the counterattack quickly, and if it's not on, trying to keep possession because it's not great when you're pinned back that deep. And we changed it in the second half. Obviously, it was good to see. Even when we went a man down, we were able to throw numbers forward and create chances, which is it's great. It's great character from the guys to continue to fight to the final whistle. And that's what's a guarantee.
It's Atlanta Soccer Tonight. I'm Jason Longshore. That was Brooks Lennon yesterday after training with Atlanta United. I think the biggest difference in the Salt Lake game and the Montreal game in the first half, because both were very good defensively, the difference is RSL wasn't getting as many numbers forward, so Atlanta was able to play more in RSL's half. And yeah, RSL got an early goal, and then Atlanta answered back. It was 1-1 at the break. I think Atlanta created more chances in the first half of the RSL game because RSL didn't commit as many numbers forward. Atlanta was able to deal with it. They're very talented, but they didn't commit as many numbers forward. Montreal was very bold, very risky, very aggressive, putting numbers forward. That pinned Atlanta back. The start to the second half was great until the goal, which was like 5 minutes. And that's a shame. The goal came against a run of play. It was a turnover, an intercepted ball that Noah Cobb was trying to open up down the left side. Montreal was able to work it back to the left. They had a couple runners, and they put in a good cross, and it's a good header. It's a good goal. Then the Gregerson yellow. So let's move ahead to the games, the second yellow for Gregerson. Let's move ahead to the games this week, and Steon Gregerson is part of this conversation because he will be out on Wednesday against NYC. He will be back for Saturday against Columbus. But no Noah Cobb. He's away with the USU-20s. Here's Rob Valentino talking about missing those two tomorrow.
I mean, it just means those two are unavailable. We've had guys that have had to be called upon that maybe you think that the young players weren't going to be the ones that were called upon this year. Efrain's stepped in a game like DC. We've got, we've got Luis Abram. We've got Derek Williams. Like, we have some players that can step in and do their job. So whatever the formation might be or their roles might be, there'll be players there to step in when their number's called.
So it comes down to, do you replace in the starting lineup from Montreal, do you replace Noah Cobb and Steon Gregerson with Luis Abram and Efrain Morales, for example, and keep the same structure that this team has played in for a little while? Or do you kind of flip the 3-2? You've played with three center backs and two central midfielders, and that's from a defensive structure, but also from a buildup structure. Do you flip it to two center backs and three central midfielders? Because I think you keep the five centrally as a base. You can tweak the alignment. You could play two center backs and play three central midfielders because you have four very good central midfielders in Jay Fortune, in Dax McCarty, in Bartek Sliesch, in Tristan Muyamba. So do you play three of them with two center backs, or do you play three center backs and two central midfielders? That's what Rob Valentino will sort out for the NYC game. You'll get Steon Gregerson back for Saturday, and it's a little bit easier to play your three center backs if you want to do that, if you feel like that's the way to go. For NYC, you've got to obviously find a way to create more chances, and I talk about the counter pressure and winning the ball back in the attacking half for a reason. I think when you're in the situation that Atlanta's in, and you have built a team to play around a number 10 who is world class. Well, when you lose that player, you don't have a like for like replacement. It's not something that you can, you know, just drop in a player, plug and play. You've got to scheme a little bit more in finding ways to create opportunities. And I think you can do that through counter pressure. It's not giving up on possession. It's, in a way, being more aggressive in possession in the attacking half to then activate your opportunities to counter press. It's not what Philadelphia and Red Bulls and St. Louis do in that play long to honestly lose the ball and then press and turn it over and get a team unbalanced. It's play, get into the attacking half, take chances, be bold, be aggressive, and if and when you lose the ball in certain moments, you've got players around the ball to win it back immediately high up the field. At that point, the opponent is destabilized. You have an opportunity to go. So I'd love to see how Atlanta can find a way to do more of that to create some different kinds of opportunities than maybe they have in the past. Against NYC, you got to deal with Santiago Rodriguez, although NYC hasn't been quite the same playing him on the wing as opposed to being the number 10. Either way, he's very, very good. I think he's better centrally. That's just me. Good, solid NYC team, especially that base in midfield with James Sands and Keaton Parks. Goalkeeper Matt Freese is in good form. This is a good NYC team. That's Wednesday. Columbus on Saturday is a great, great team. Maybe one of the best 18-month runs that we have seen in this league. It's got to be up there. It's got to be in the conversation because this is a team that won MLS Cup last year and was the best team in the league, especially in the second half of the year. They went to the CONCACAF Champions Cup final. And on Saturday, they went to Los Angeles and demolished LAFC, who had a 10-game unbeaten run. Demolished them 5-1. Just absolute throttling of LAFC on the road, on the West Coast. Maybe the best win of the season, maybe the best win of a few seasons. That good of a team. Since the CONCACAF Champions Cup final, remember where Columbus went to Pachuca, had some stomach ailments, and there were some conversations about, was that accidental? Was that something else? I don't know if there's ever been any more talk about that or any resolutions to those controversies. Since that game, Columbus has won 6 of their last 7. They've scored in their last 5, 20 goals. They're allowing less than a goal a game. They're 6 points off the supporter shield, and they've done that alongside getting to the Champions Cup final. Nobody's done this. Nobody's made a deep run in CONCACAF and been able to play at the level that Columbus has been able to play at. Wilfred Nancy is a name who has come up around the U.S. men's national team coaching job, and I don't know if U.S. soccer has wanted to talk to him, has talked to Columbus about talking to him. I don't know if he's interested. I'm not sure. I'm not sure if he's really what U.S. soccer needs at the moment. I think they might need more of a tournament manager to lead into 2026 than a builder like Wilfred Nancy is. I would love to see Wilfred in the long term. Maybe that's after 26. You know, if you want to take him before Saturday's game, I'm not going to complain about that as an Atlanta United commentator because he's the best manager in the league right now. Columbus is the best team in the league right now, and it's not going to be easy on Saturday. It should be a very fun match. These teams have matched up very, very well over the past couple of seasons, and I hope Atlanta can elevate their game for that one. But you got to deal with NYC first. Columbus plays Charlotte tomorrow night, then play Atlanta. Going to be a busy week. We'll have all of it on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. Full-time reports will be posted after both matches, wherever you get your Off the Woodwork podcasts. But coming up next to close out in Atlanta soccer tonight on a Tuesday, it is the 3-4-3, three local stories, four headlines, three things that make me smile about this game that I love so much. It's coming up next in 5 minutes on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
It's time to wrap up tonight's show with the 3-4-3.
3-4-3.
Three local stories, four headlines from around the world, and three things that made you smile about the game.
Atlanta Soccer Tonight is on Sports Radio 92.9, The Game.
Welcome back. It's Atlanta Soccer Tonight. I'm Jason Longshore. Thanks for hanging out with me on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. We close out every Tuesday night show when it's not Tournament Central with the 3-4-3, and it's time for this week's edition. It's brought to you by Ford. Visit your local Ford dealer. It's three local stories. It's four headlines from all over the soccer world and three things that make me smile about the game that I love so much. Let's start on the local side. Number one, I mentioned it a little bit earlier, Noah Cobb. He is off to represent the U.S. U-20 national team at the CONCACAF U-20 Championship. That's a qualifying tournament for the upcoming FIFA U-20 World Cup. First match is on July 19th versus Jamaica, facing off with Ashton Gordon from Atlanta United 2, a product of the Atlanta United Academy. You've seen him in the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup for the first team. Tournament's being played in Mexico, in Celaya. The U.S. will play Jamaica on the 19th, Cuba on the 22nd, and Costa Rica on the 25th. All the games are at 10 p.m. Eastern time. Really looking forward to seeing Noah and Ashton in this tournament. But on the Noah Cobb side of things, I think just talking to him a little bit after the match on Saturday in Montreal, you see really quickly how much it means to him to be part of the national team program. And how ready he is for this. This is a guy who started the year, he played with Atlanta United too. Thought he'd be kind of a swing guy, a little bit like Nick Firmino, going back and forth between the two teams. He's played a lot of minutes, and I think he's grown up a lot. And you never know when you're a young player when you're going to get that opportunity. Noah has run with it, and he has earned this opportunity with the US U-20s, and I'm excited to see him in this tournament. Number two, another Atlanta United Academy product making some headlines. Dominic Chongqui, he was named the MLS Next Pro Rising Star of the most recent match week. Scored in his second appearance for Atlanta United 2. He's got goals in both appearances. It gave Atlanta United 2 a 2-1 lead late in the second half. Now, they did concede. It finished 2-2 on Sunday night against Columbus. Atlanta won the shootout afterwards, but Chongqui, not even just the goal, he was very good in his first start at this professional level. Atlanta United at left back through the academy, George Bello, Caleb Wiley, maybe Dominic Chongqui. Going to be really, really interested to see how the 16-year-old continues to develop. Number three on the local side, South Georgia Tormenta. They won 2-1 over Lexington on the weekend, and that was their 50th all-time win in USL League One. Ferreira Fonseca, he had a header in the 87th minute. Lexington opened the scoring. South Georgia Tormenta came all the way back, and that header from Fonseca ended up giving them the 2-1 win. Let's move into the headlines from around the world. And the first one, I mentioned it a little bit in the first segment. If you heard Sunday night show, I think it was kind of obvious how fired up I was about CONMEBOL and some of the things that were being said. Hard Rock Stadium, they issued a statement today after CONMEBOL issued a statement yesterday. And in Hard Rock Stadium's statement, they said that they exceeded CONMEBOL's security recommendations for the Copa America after all this happened on Sunday. They actually went above and beyond what CONMEBOL had recommended. More than two dozen people were arrested. Hundreds more were locked out in very hot conditions. You had fans without tickets who tried to force their way into the stadium for the Argentina-Colombia match. And I know it's what those people did is 100% wrong. No question about it. However, from an event organization standpoint, they should not have been that close to the gate. CONMEBOL did not organize their event, their championship match of their centerpiece event. They did not organize this event well at all. They didn't have a security perimeter. They didn't have multiple ticket checks. They did not have those things that are just very common at major events at this stage. They didn't do it. So by not planning that properly, this is what happens. You have the ability for people without tickets to get that close and be that disruptive. Hard Rock Stadium, in their statement today, said that they implemented and in many cases exceeded CONMEBOL's security recommendations throughout the tournament and the final. This is a venue. They've hosted the Super Bowl. The Super Bowl is one of the biggest events in the world. They've hosted it. They've handled it. They have not had these problems before. This is not a regular occurrence at this venue. The difference is CONMEBOL's recommendations and CONMEBOL's resources allocated and CONMEBOL's planning was not good enough. And to the point, and this was something that I talked about on Sunday night and talked about on social media as well, you have people who are trying to create a narrative that, oh, the World Cup in 2026, you don't need to have it in the United States. They can't even do these events right. When the U.S. has more major sporting events than any other country in the world, their venues have more major events than others in the world. This is common circumstance, but they're actually planned properly. FIFA's already planning for 2026. FIFA is in charge of organizing the World Cup in 2026. The stadiums are not. The stadiums were not in charge of organizing everything with this tournament this summer. That was on CONMEBOL, who organizes the tournament. FIFA will have things in place. The stadiums will be ready for it, and everything will be fine in 2026. This is not something to do with, oh, well, the U.S. doesn't have a soccer culture. Well, they do, and they can handle these events. They have before, and they will again. The common denominator is CONMEBOL, because these events have happened in World Cup qualifiers in South America. They have happened at previous Copa Americas in South America. This happens in Copa Libertadores, Copa Sudamericana. Remember, there was a Copa Libertadores second leg of a final that had to be moved to Europe, to Madrid. Not that long ago, by the way. Remember, Pitti Martinez played in it for River Plate in the Santiago Bernabeu in Madrid, not in Buenos Aires, in Madrid. So CONMEBOL's going to tell you that it's everybody else's fault. They had to move a second leg of a final of a major event to another continent because they couldn't organize things properly. Just keep that in mind. Number two on the headlines, German leagues. They're going to follow what we saw in the Euros, where only team captains are allowed to talk to referees about their decisions. This is going to take place in top-tier Bundesliga all the way down to amateur and youth leagues and on the men's and the women's sides. The German Federation said in a statement, a player who ignores their role of their captain, complains to the referee, or behaves disrespectfully will be cautioned. UEFA is going to continue this policy. Now the German leagues have adopted this policy. It's kind of just going back to the old school laws of the game, which is how it used to be. It's how it was when I was a kid. I know I'm old, but still. This is something that every league should adopt. It would help cut down on dissent. It would help cut down on mass confrontations. You wouldn't need a mass confrontation policy if you're Major League Soccer. Just adopt this. If the goalkeeper is the captain, then they nominate a field player to speak for them on the field. That's how this works. It's fine. It worked really well during the Euros. It should be common around every league in the world. Number three on the headlines, U.S. women's national team, their final send-off match before the Olympics was tonight against Costa Rica in D.C. at Audi Field. The pitch, Lindsey Horan didn't want to talk about it. I'll say that it looked like a broccoli patch. It was very, very bad on TV. The game wasn't really great either. It was a scoreless draw against a Costa Rican side that just sat back very, very deep. 18th time these teams have played, the first time that the U.S. did not win. Tons of chances created. XG was 1.82 to 0.04, but no goals for the U.S. It is only the second time ever that the U.S. has lost a send-off, or not won a send-off match. They didn't lose tonight. It felt like a loss, but it was a draw. Second time that they did not win the send-off match before a major tournament. Last time was the 2015 World Cup. That one worked out okay. We'll see if the Olympics can as well. We'll get deeper into the men's and women's Olympics next week on AST. Number four on the headlines as we wrap up a 3-4-3 on a Tuesday edition of Atlanta Soccer Tonight. Major League Soccer and Adidas, they unveiled the MLS Archive Collection today. It's third jerseys worn by five clubs for the remainder of the 2024 season. I hope these jerseys get a longer lifespan than 12 games because they're great. LA Galaxy, LAFC, Inter Miami, Portland Timbers, Sporting Kansas City are the five. This is going to be a recurring series. More clubs will have a third jersey in 2025 and beyond. It's all about drawing on the heritage of the city. And if it's somebody like Sporting Kansas City, you can draw off of the heritage of the Kansas City Wizards, for example. Great looking kit for Kansas City. LA Galaxy, it's a throwback to their 1996 kit. Love it. The others are different. Inter Miami is in Miami Dolphins colors. It looks great. LAFC, maybe the weakest of the five, in my opinion. I'm not a fashion stylist, but it was probably my least favorite. Portland is all right. Portland's cool. It looks very retro. I think you could have done more with the Timbers style of things from their history. I would have liked to have seen that, but I really can't wait to see what they do with Atlanta, because you know they will. The third jerseys have always sold well on the Atlanta side of things. Do they go kind of a Chiefs style retro throwback jersey with the 80s version of the Chiefs, 79 to 81, with the red, white, and blue? Do they do something completely different? I'll be fascinated to see what direction they do, because I would assume Atlanta would be involved in this archive collection next season. We'll have to wait and see. All right, to close out, three things that make me smile about the game. Number one, I talked about it a lot during the match on Saturday night, the creativity and tactics from Montreal. It was crazy at times to see Joaquin Sosa, the left-sided center back, making like diagonal runs inside out like a winger would. Raheem Edwards becoming the additional center back in the buildup between two center backs after Sosa left that. They played with three. It was just wild to see. It didn't have quite as much success as I thought it might. That's a credit to Atlanta defensively, but it was a lot of fun to watch. And Laurent Courtois is a very fun manager to watch. I want to see how he continues to grow in his career. Number two on things that make me smile, I mentioned it to start the show, the best teams in the two tournaments this summer winning them. Spain was brilliant. I think they were the best team of the summer. They should go into 2026 as the favorite to win the World Cup, in my opinion. Argentina is not far off of that, although they're not going to look quite the same. As I get to number three in things that make me smile, Angel Di Maria, his Argentine career has national team career has now ended with the Copa America championship. Just an incredible player. And at times you look at him and you don't think he's going to be as good as he actually is. He's lanky, you know, he's kind of awkward looking at times, but he is a clutch big game player. And it's fitting that he goes out as a Copa America champion. And I think you saw some of it with Argentina after Messi went out due to injury with an ankle, looks like sprain, and they said ligament damage. That's what a sprain is. I think you saw once they rebounded, it was a little bit of they wanted to make sure they won that tournament for Di Maria, and they did. And you could see what it meant to him. You could see what it meant to Lionel Scaloni. Really impressive, incredible. One of the legends of the Argentine national team, Angel Di Maria, his national team career has come to a close. We're back tomorrow night with Atlanta United Soccer on 92.9 The Game. Five Stripes Countdown starts at 6:30 with Abe Gordon and Garrett Chapman. Mike Conti and I will be with you from the Benz. Kickoff set for 7:40 between Atlanta and NYC. Back at it again on Saturday as the defending MLS Cup champions Columbus come to town. AST will be back with you next Tuesday night at 10 p.m. Adios, everybody.
It's time to wrap up tonight's show with the 3-4-3.
3-4-3.
Three local stories, four headlines from around the world, and three things that made you smile about the game.
Atlanta Soccer Tonight is on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Welcome back. It's Atlanta Soccer Tonight. I'm Jason Longshore. Thanks for hanging out with me on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. We close out every Tuesday night show when it's not tournament central with the 3-4-3, and it's time for this week's edition. It's brought to you by Ford. Visit your local Ford dealer. It's three local stories. It's four headlines from all over the soccer world and three things that make me smile about the game that I love so much. Let's start on the local side. Number one, I mentioned it a little bit earlier, Noah Cobb. He is off to represent the U.S. U-20 national team at the CONCACAF U-20 Championship. That's a qualifying tournament for the upcoming FIFA U-20 World Cup. First match is on July 19th versus Jamaica, facing off with Ashton Gordon from Atlanta United 2, a product of the Atlanta United Academy. You've seen him in the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup for the first team. Tournament's being played in Mexico, in Celaya. The U.S. will play Jamaica on the 19th, Cuba on the 22nd, and Costa Rica on the 25th. All the games are at 10 p.m. Eastern time. Really looking forward to seeing Noah and Ashton in this tournament. But on the Noah Cobb side of things, I think just talking to him a little bit after the match on Saturday in Montreal, you see really quickly how much it means to him to be part of the national team program and how ready he is for this. This is a guy who started the year, he played with Atlanta United too. Thought he'd be kind of a swing guy, a little bit like Nick Firmino, going back and forth between the two teams. He's played a lot of minutes, and I think he's grown up a lot. And you never know when you're a young player when you're going to get that opportunity. Noah has run with it, and he has earned this opportunity with the US U-20s, and I'm excited to see him in this tournament. Number two, another Atlanta United Academy product making some headlines, Dominic Chongqui. He was named the MLS Next Pro Rising Star of the most recent match week. Scored in his second appearance for Atlanta United 2. He's got goals in both appearances. It gave Atlanta United 2 a 2-1 lead late in the second half. Now, they did concede. It finished 2-2 on Sunday night against Columbus. Atlanta won the shootout afterwards. But Chongqui, not even just the goal, he was very good in his first start at this professional level. Atlanta United at left back through the academy, George Bellow, Caleb Wiley, maybe Dominic Chongqui. Going to be really, really interested to see how the 16-year-old continues to develop. Number three on the local side, South Georgia Tormenta. They won 2-1 over Lexington on the weekend, and that was their 50th all-time win in USL League One. Ferreira Fonseca, he had a header in the 87th minute. Lexington opened the scoring. South Georgia Tormenta came all the way back, and that header from Fonseca ended up giving them the 2-1 win. Let's move into the headlines from around the world. And the first one, I mentioned it a little bit in the first segment. If you heard Sunday night show, I think it was kind of obvious how fired up I was about CONMEBOL and some of the things that were being said. Hard Rock Stadium, they issued a statement today after CONMEBOL issued a statement yesterday. And in Hard Rock Stadium's statement, they said that they exceeded CONMEBOL's security recommendations for the Copa America after all this happened on Sunday. They actually went above and beyond what CONMEBOL had recommended. More than 24 people were arrested. Hundreds more were locked out and very hot conditions. You had fans without tickets who tried to force their way into the stadium for the Argentina-Colombia match. And I know it's what those people did is 100% wrong. No question about it. However, from an event organization standpoint, they should not have been that close to the gate. CONMEBOL did not organize their event, their championship match of their centerpiece event. They did not organize this event well at all. They didn't have a security perimeter. They didn't have multiple ticket checks. They did not have those things that are just very common at major events at this stage. They didn't do it. So by not planning that properly, this is what happens. You have the ability for people without tickets to get that close and be that disruptive. Hard Rock Stadium, in their statement today, said that they implemented and in many cases exceeded CONMEBOL's security recommendations throughout the tournament and the final. This is a venue. They've hosted the Super Bowl. The Super Bowl is one of the biggest events in the world. They've hosted it. They've handled it. They have not had these problems before. This is not a regular occurrence at this venue. The difference is CONMEBOL's recommendations and CONMEBOL's resources allocated and CONMEBOL's planning was not good enough. And to the point, and this was something that I talked about on Sunday night and talked about on social media as well, you have people who are trying to create a narrative that, oh, the World Cup in 2026, you don't need to have it in the United States. They can't even do these events right. When the U.S. has more major sporting events than any other country in the world, their venues have more major events than others in the world. This is a common circumstance, but they're actually planned properly. FIFA's already planning for 2026. FIFA is in charge of organizing the World Cup in 2026. The stadiums are not. The stadiums were not in charge of organizing everything with this tournament this summer. That was on CONMEBOL, who organizes the tournament. FIFA will have things in place. The stadiums will be ready for it, and everything will be fine in 2026. This is not something to do with, oh, well, the U.S. doesn't have a soccer culture. Well, they do, and they can handle these events. They have before, and they will again. The common denominator is CONMEBOL, because these events have happened in World Cup qualifiers in South America. They have happened at previous Copa Americas in South America. This happens in Copa Libertadores, Copa Sudamericana. Remember, there was a Copa Libertadores second leg of a final that had to be moved to Europe, to Madrid. Not that long ago, by the way. Remember, Pitti Martinez played in it for River Plate in the Santiago Bernabeu. In Madrid, not in Buenos Aires, in Madrid. So CONMEBOL's going to tell you that it's everybody else's fault. They had to move a second leg of a final of a major event to another continent because they couldn't organize things properly. Just keep that in mind. Number two on the headlines, German leagues. They're going to follow what we saw in the Euros, where only team captains are allowed to talk to referees about their decisions. This is going to take place in top-tier Bundesliga all the way down to amateur and youth leagues and on the men's and the women's sides. The German Federation said in a statement, a player who ignores their role of their captain, complains to the referee, or behaves disrespectfully will be cautioned. UEFA is going to continue this policy. Now the German leagues have adopted this policy. It's kind of just going back to the old school laws of the game, which is how it used to be. It's how it was when I was a kid. I know I'm old, but still, this is something that every league should adopt. It would help cut down on dissent. It would help cut down on mass confrontations. You wouldn't need a mass confrontation policy if you're Major League Soccer. Just adopt this. If the goalkeeper is the captain, then they nominate a field player to speak for them on the field. That's how this works. It's fine. It worked really well during the Euros. It should be common around every league in the world. Number three on the headlines, U.S. Women's National Team, their final send-off match before the Olympics was tonight against Costa Rica in D.C. at Audi Field. The pitch, Lindsey Horan didn't want to talk about it. I'll say that it looked like a broccoli patch. It was very, very bad on TV. The game wasn't really great either. It was a scoreless draw against a Costa Rican side that just sat back very, very deep. 18th time these teams have played, the first time that the U.S. did not win. Tons of chances created. XG was 1.82 to 0.04, but no goals for the U.S. It is only the second time ever that the U.S. has lost a send-off, or not won a send-off match. They didn't lose tonight. It felt like a loss, but it was a draw. Second time that they did not win the send-off match before a major tournament. Last time was the 2015 World Cup. That one worked out okay. We'll see if the Olympics can as well. We'll get deeper into the men's and women's Olympics next week on AST. Number four on the headlines as we wrap up a 3-4-3 on a Tuesday edition of Atlanta Soccer Tonight. Major League Soccer and Adidas, they unveiled the MLS Archive Collection today. It's third jerseys worn by five clubs for the remainder of the 2024 season. I hope these jerseys get a longer lifespan than 12 games because they're great. LA Galaxy, LAFC, Inter Miami, Portland Timbers, Sporting Kansas City are the five. This is going to be a recurring series. More clubs will have a third jersey in 2025 and beyond. It's all about drawing on the heritage of the city. And if it's somebody like Sporting Kansas City, you can draw off of the heritage of the Kansas City Wizards, for example. Great looking kit for Kansas City. LA Galaxy, it's a throwback to their 1996 kit. Love it. The others are different. Inter Miami is in Miami Dolphins colors. It looks great. LAFC, maybe the weakest of the five, in my opinion. I'm not a fashion stylist, but it was probably my least favorite. Portland is all right. Portland's cool. It looks very retro. I think you could have done more with the Timbers style of things from their history. I would have liked to have seen that, but I really can't wait to see what they do with Atlanta, because you know they will. The third jerseys have always sold well on the Atlanta side of things. Do they go kind of a Chiefs style retro throwback jersey with the 80s version of the Chiefs, 79 to 81, with the red, white, and blue? Do they do something completely different? I'll be fascinated to see what direction they do, because I would assume Atlanta would be involved in this archive collection next season. We'll have to wait and see. All right, to close out, three things that make me smile about the game. Number one, I talked about it a lot during the match on Saturday night, the creativity and tactics from Montreal. It was crazy at times to see Joaquin Sosa, the left-sided center back, making like diagonal runs inside out like a winger would. Raheem Edwards becoming the additional center back in the buildup between two center backs after Sosa left that. They played with three. It was just wild to see. It didn't have quite as much success as I thought it might. That's a credit to Atlanta defensively, but it was a lot of fun to watch. And Laurent Courtois is a very fun manager to watch. I want to see how he continues to grow in his career. Number two on things that make me smile, I mentioned it to start the show, the best teams in the two tournaments this summer winning them. Spain was brilliant. I think they were the best team of the summer. They should go into 2026 as the favorite to win the World Cup, in my opinion. Argentina is not far off of that, although they're not going to look quite the same. As I get to number three in things that make me smile, Angel Di Maria, his Argentine career has national team career has now ended with the Copa America championship. Just an incredible player. And at times you look at him and you don't think he's going to be as good as he actually is. He's lanky, you know, he's kind of awkward looking at times, but he is a clutch, big game player. And it's fitting that he goes out as a Copa America champion. And I think you saw some of it with Argentina after Messi went out due to injury with an ankle, looks like sprain, and they said ligament damage. That's what a sprain is. I think you saw once they rebounded, it was a little bit of they wanted to make sure that they won that tournament for Di Maria, and they did. And you could see what it meant to him. You could see what it meant to Lionel Scaloni. Really impressive, incredible. One of the legends of the Argentine national team, Angel Di Maria, his national team career has come to a close. We're back tomorrow night with Atlanta United Soccer on 92.9 The Game. Five Stripes Countdown starts at 6:30 with Abe Gordon and Garrett Chapman. Mike Conti and I will be with you from the Benz. Kickoff set for 7:40 between Atlanta and NYC. Back at it again on Saturday as the defending MLS Cup champions Columbus come to town. AST will be back with you next Tuesday night at 10 p.m. Adios, everybody.